Ti ringrazio all'organizzatore di fare possibile questo convegno che mi piace tantissimo. L'anno scorso sono venuto la prima volta a un convegno di Terry Clate e da questo tempo ho deciso che preferisco i convegni di Terry Clate di quelli di matematici perché sono più divertenti. Allora, I continue in English because some people here. So it's about the new infrastructure in Terry Life. What is the, I mean, I think I don't have to introduce.
Should I?
I don't have to introduce Tech Life. I mean, it's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, distribution of tech. What are our aims in Tech Life is more or less to put all the free stuff we can find on the comprehensive tech archive network into ready for consumption form, so you can run it from DVD. On a wide range of platform operating systems. And yeah, so I mean, this is quite a lot already. We have about 15 architecture operating system combinations and a TechMF tree of about 1 gigabyte. So everything what is free on the CTN archive is in TechLife. And what started actually, not this one, but was also a reason to continue to do a lot of work is that since you all know TTech is not developed anymore, Thomas, thanks to him, he has done a huge work and is still contributing to the development within the TechLife system, has stopped to support TTech and develop any further. And now the TechLife system is replacing TTech in many distributions, Unix distributions at least, I'm under Windows version, but at least all the Debian paste, Red Hat, SUSE, all of them are starting to switch or have already switched as the default tech system. So this is, well, what's about. How is it organized? How we are organizing since about 1.5 years, we switched from Perforce to Subversion. So there's a public accessible anonymous access repository of Subversion, which is quite big. If you check it out, it's more than 2 gigabyte. And well, of course, I mean, as I described, we are making not only DVDs, which are ready to run on a wide variety of system, but also installation CDs, because sometimes we want to cram everything into a CD. And then we want to install this whole system on a hard drive from Windows to Apple to Unix derivations. And so there are, in this time, in the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years, quite a lot of stuff has been done. So what we are doing, we're having scripts for this stuff, preparing the installation for mastering. I mean, this is something which is not so complicated. Then the installation from various media. We have DVD, we have installed, from zip version, from CD, from DVD. Then we have one of the big works is to update stuff from the comprehensive tech archive network into the Subversion repository, because you know that on the CTN archive, stuff is put as authors put it there. So it's in arbitrary order, mostly not prepared to put into an TechMF tree. And then, of course, various checks about the whole archive, about coverage. So these scripts were developed over the years. I mean, you don't want to look at it. They are handcrafted, they are absolutely hard to read, they are not extensible in most cases, there's absolutely no documentation. I mean, the language we were using are Shell, Perl, XML processing, C code, I don't know what, Python, I don't know, whatever people had at hand and wanted to use. And this is currently a horror. I mean, the biggest problem we had with the old infrastructure, which I'm talking about, this one here, was that Fabrice Popinot wrote a very nice module for accessing this in Perl and a mystical script called TPM Factory, which could do, I think, anything from cooking a coffee to creating new tech packages. The problem is nobody knows about this one because it's just too cryptic, no documentation. So other problem, well, to talk about what we had before. The infrastructure, what's TPMs, was it called? Tech Package Manager, Management, whatever. It's just an XML file for every unit. The unit is, so to say, one package from the CTN archive, which is transferred into the TechLife repository, which contains a lot of stuff. File patterns, in the sense of which file should be put into this package, and also file lists. then stuff like title description, about license, version information, then activation stuff. You know, when you install type 1 fonts, you have to activate the map font. If you install a new hyphenation pattern, you want to activate it in the latest format, maybe. Same if you have a new format. So there was some infrastructure information, some information on what to do with this. The problem is with these TPMs, and that was what started our work, was it was a mixture of generated and static information. If you take a look at this TPM factory, you have these file lists which specify, and from the file lists and some magic built into the scripts, all the stuff was derived and all the file lists, which was quite hard because if you change the wrong thing, then you destroy everything. Yeah. And if you change something else, then it was not taken over at the next generation. Then a lot of duplicated information, which, as usual, as you know, is always out of date, like version, license, and description. We up now and then took this information from the catalog, but this was not automated, or we filled it in by hand. And that was all. This was, in a sense, static information. It was never changed, but by hand. And then probably the worst case, it was XML. I mean, I'm not a big friend of XML, but if you want to actually write an installer which should work on about 15 platform architecture, then you don't want to rely on XML because you can't parse it. You cannot guarantee that you have an XML parser on all these platforms, which is just too bad, you know? That's the reason what happened is that we had, at the pre-mastering stage, we transferred these XML files in list files, whatever. It was just a list with a bit of structure, with bangs and stars for special actions, so that the installer could read this. It was a shell installer, and that was, in fact, again a problem because the list files again were out of date all the time. So all this started now already 1.5 years ago on a mailing list that we should change something on this because it won't support the next few years in this way. And that was quite a long discussion with no outcome. And this year in April on EuroBacotech, I was just discussing with, well, the main players in this area and what could be done. And of course, I always jump into action. I started to code something up as an example because I was lazy. Well, in fact, it turned out that then it was adopted and we now have this stuff what I'm presenting here. So what we want to have from this new infrastructure, we want to have a separation from static and generated content. Like you have, think about the tech input file. This is the source, so to say, of the package. Then you translate it or run it through, extend it with some information. You collect information from various sources and generate, well, this object, what is called now object, but which contains all the rest. That was one that we actually have to edit one file and there's nothing superfluous in there. It's only stuff we actually change. Then, while getting rid of these additional list files I told about, that we don't have, that we have one central place where everything is found. In fact, we will see there's one TechLive database which contains all the information and which is easily readable and parsable. Then, well, big wish for everyone. Single package updates over the web. Most people when using Windows know MikTeX, and it's quite nice a feature of MikTeX that you just say, well, I want to update this one package and do this automatically. And it's unfortunately a pain that we are not able to do this until now in TechLive. So that was high on our wish list that we can get this working too, of course. We are far from there, but the infrastructure is hopefully there. And then, last but not least, a better documentation. As I said, TechLive is now replacing. I mean, I put TechLive into Debian 2 years ago. I was actually the first one who read these TPM files, and now it's with this in Ubuntu. Red Hat did some packaging, SUSE, but it's most of the packaging is in the other, has big failures because they don't parse the TPM files, they forgot about the actions, they forgot about activating fonts. They're just taking all the whole update map sys file and take it as it is. And this doesn't work, unfortunately. And so we want to make it easier for system integrators. So I want to make it easier for myself when I put my Debian hat on. But not only for me, but for others too. Yeah. So what's all about? Now it will be a
bit technical. In fact, I was thinking about a real computer science talk with a language definition in Bajo's normal form, but then I said, well, okay. So we have, in fact, three objects or three type of files. These are TechLife packages source, TechLife packages object, which are just the extension or compilation of the source files, and then the TechLife package database, which are just a concatenation of all the objects. So one of these TechLife package database describes the actual status. So if you install 15 packages, then your database contains these 15 packages. And on the net, you can download the one from the net, what is available there, and compare revisions and all this stuff. So this is the idea. So I give a simple example. So this is actually a working example, also it will change very soon, what a source file looks like. It just takes the name, Bima, for example, a category. Those who know TechLife, there were some categories of collections and core stuff, and then dependencies. So if you want to run Bima, you need PGF, and this package, what is written in front of the PGF, this will go away. I just 10 minutes ago wrote an email to Carl that we have to kill this. So this is quite simple. You see here, you would say, man, there's quite a lot missing. There are all the files missing. And in fact, this is true because, I mean, yeah, we have no information about the files, but I will come to this later on. Another example, a bit more complicated, is for CWeb, whatever. So you have, again, the name, the category. And then you have the strange patterns. Doc pattern, bin pattern. So you can assume what this means. It's just patterns for documentation files. The first three lines actually are not patterns, it's just files, but you can do this. And this binary patterns has this arch inside because we have multiple architectures. But in fact, this is the idea. You just put patterns to catch all the files which are so belonging to this package. So what are the allowed fields? Oh, maybe I go back. So it's quite simple. I mean, key space value. There are some extensions on the second layer, also of the object files, but to this later. So the keys are name, then category, which is one of collection theme, you see, then catalog, which gives you a link to the tech catalog. If this is present, then it gives the entry in the tech catalog where you find it. Otherwise, the name is taken as the name of the catalog entry. So in 95%, it's the same. The problem is our packages have upper lowercase, while on the catalog, everything is lowercase. So we have to add this kind of stuff. Then for something, we have short and long descriptions, which we actually don't want to have. We only have it for our, in the sense, TechLife packages, for our collections and schemes, because the description should be taken from the tech catalog. We don't want to duplicate anything. We want that everything is in the catalog and other people can profit from the information in the catalog. Then this dependency stuff, which we have to fill in because, well, as good as we know, you see dependencies, there are more than one is possible. Then these execute statements, I said about activating maps, formats, and definition patterns. And then these patterns. Well, for the patterns, so what is the pattern language? By the way, if anything is unclear or if you have immediate suggestion how to improve it, we are quite open to this, so it's no problem. So, well, this pattern language I developed is, well, it's just prefix type pattern. So prefix is plus, or bank. What does it mean? And the type and pattern are the following four ways. So F for file, and you give a pass, where the last component can have the usual shell extension of star and question mark. We have seen examples of this and we'll see more. Then D for directory and the pass, and it just scoop up all the files in this directory. Then T, this is a bit strange, but you will see later why it's quite nice. It's just T, I don't remember why I put the D there, but anyway, word 1 to word N and the word L for last, which includes all files in and below the directory, which is at word 1 slash word 2, whoop, to the last word N, then any other directories, and then the word L. You will see examples for this later. And then some regular expression, the fallback, you can put anything here, what is a regular expression in Perl code. So example, a very simple one is just run pattern fdecmfcheckTech, which includes everything which is in the directory of checkTech.
Then pin pattern, fpin $r. Piptech, we will see a small trick why we introduce this $r here, which actually includes always the right binary, because we have so many binaries for the architecture. Then run pattern for a typical example for Lambda, the Lambda package. We cannot include all of techmf lambda because there are other packages there, but we want to include everything under techmf lambda base. This is D. This is too much a typical example for run pattern for this T stuff, where we include everything which is in techmf dist omega, whatever there is, uni 2 sha. Now, what is there? There is OTP, OCP, font, VF, all this stuff. So we scoop up everything in this one line, which helps quite a lot. I mean, makes pattern writing easier. And run, well, actually, I'm sure that up to now we don't have to use it. There's one reason it's very expensive to use an actual regex, because we have to go through all files of TechLife and actually mapping them, and this is bad. So we could, in theory, use it, but we don't use it. So there's one thing you have seen in this example. I'm going back. Whoop. Where was it? Yeah, in the first one. That there is actually no pattern at all. So which files are taken? And the idea is we want to make it as easy as possible. We have something like patterns which are auto-generated. If you don't put any pattern in there, or you put in front of every pattern a plus, you remember this prefix, plus means take the auto-generate patterns and take this one in addition, so that we can mix a bit with one. Then just these are added. For run patterns, it's added key, techmf dist, top tier name. What is top tier? It's just make index, tech, generic, tech, make index, piptech, whatever, you know, the first ones of this directory. And top patterns, so only these five patterns are automatically added. And the nice thing is, I just go on to this, look at the lower part, from our total number of 1,500 something source files, we have only 168 which actually contain patterns. The rest have the automatically generated patterns scoop up the right things. Then the binary and the hyphen, there are 125, they don't have any auto-generated patterns. We cannot generate automatically the binaries of some file. We have to write them by hand. So where we actually have to override something of the auto are only 43, and those are packages which are named like the formats, mostly formats like omega, tech, lambda, the name of formats, and some special programs where we have to work a bit to put patterns in. So this auto-generated saves quite a lot of work in pattern writing, and that was the idea. Yeah, there's another trick which helps. They are written there above, this architecture expansion. If you put somewhere into a file pattern $r, then it just takes the right string at expansion time, because, well, we have make then zips for, or probably not zip, but lzip and lzma for the next release. We have to take the right architecture. And then the second trick is that for if there is something with Win32, foobar, then we also check for Win32 for the extension bat, DLL, and exe. This way we can write, where is it? This way we can write these here, and we actually will get the Win32 version of cwift.exe. So one pattern for all of them, one ring to rule them all. Okay. So this is quite nice. I mean, that was, yeah. So, okay, this was the source files, and then every night a nice script is running which takes the subversion repository and translates it into these object files. They look very similar. What is the difference? You see already, well, the name stays the same, the category. Okay, there is something new. This is the revision. You might ask, why didn't we put the version number? If you can program a good method to get the version number of a tech package which is increasing, which is machine readable and always function, then it would be happy. It's not possible. Package authors just switch arbitrarily. They don't have version numbers. They just jump over something. So we decided we are not interested in the version number. We put it there in some in some other way, but actually we're just putting as a revision number the just the revision number of the maximum change in the subversion repository. This way it's very easy to check if the package on the web is newer than the one installed, because you take a look at one have you installed and it tells you revision 3900. And in fact, on the web, there is the package has a revision number 4,400 something. It doesn't mean that there were 1,000 revisions in between, but there was a change of this package, and then you know it's newer. So this is something which is quite easy, and we won't have to change as long as we stay with Subversion, which we hope we'll do. Then, well, what you have seen also that the patterns are gone, of course. We want to have the actual files, and are replaced by files, doc files, bin files, run files statements. They have a bit complicated structure so that you have always, the name doc files and then the size, because we want the installer inform the user about how much he is going to install. And then we put just the list of the files. And for the binary files, we have an additional tag, this architecture tag, which lists for every architecture the files included and the respective size. So this actually fully describes what is presenting on the web, for example. Otherwise, well, in addition, there are some... By the way, it's coming on the next page, I think. Yeah, this is already explained, revision is explained. Yeah, the catalog stuff. We are not doing it at the moment because the catalog stuff parsing routines are quite shaky, so if one of you is a good XML programmer who can program Perl code to read XML, then I would be happy if he could help me. So in fact, we will put the catalog stuff in at some time, but currently we are not doing this. What will come in there are the authors, the version number as given in the catalog, which the author is giving, the license, especially the verification of the license. We are also in the process of trying to verify all the licenses of the packages, which is just an incredible amount of work. But during this process, we already find several packages which are non-commercial, and we cannot put it on Intech Live. So, but this is a process which, I don't know how long it will take. Okay, the Telhive package database format is just the concatenation of all this. So that was the description of how it's working. Of course, this is all intertwined in some way into the implementation. And, well, the biggest part is that we've written a Perl programming interface which consists of these objects here. There's a TechLive tree. What is it? It's just a scooping up of the subversion status with all the revision numbers and post-processing for easier and faster matching of these patterns, because if you actually match every file in the TechLive distribution, the production of the TechLive database takes hours because it's too slow. And then the Tech Catalog here, we would need work if someone is brave. No, it's not brave, it's just XML. I don't understand the documentation of the XML module of Perl. So it should be somehow give us the information of the Tech Catalog in some way. Then objects for the source and the, so Perl objects for the source and the object code, which allow, well, the usual stuff, reading in, writing out, member access function, reading stuff, generation for the TechLive source file, you can generate one of these TechLive objects. The object can generate a zip file for the architectures and for all the stuff for the web. And then the TechLive database, which just collects all the stuff and some additional utilities we have around. This is all, well, the status, what's about the status? Yeah. Okay, the modules have a full documentation in pod format. So this is with, in fact, there's also a text documentation, but it's now out of date. The pod format is always up to date, because when we change something, we change immediately the pod documentation of the Perl code, because otherwise we lose ourselves. We have this additional text AP document, which is, let's say, 95% correct. The article accompanying these talks, which gives a bit more than I give here in this talk. What we have is the shell programming interface, which is, well, I haven't worked on it for quite some time, but at least some things can be done. And who was it? One of the CTAN guys, I don't remember, wrote some Python module to read this stuff in. So it's, well, at least a start. How's it currently integrated into the tech life? The most important thing for our day-in-day life is the script. Well, in fact, this is a suite of scripts, several, five, six. This is CTAN to Tech Life, which is the one. If you have been on the, or have read the articles of the Europachotech conference about this new infrastructure for the tech catalog, it's about, well, how to make out of the stuff on the comprehensive tech RFID network something which is into a ready to drop in TechMF tree. And there's some work, we have done quite a lot, that this is working now for most packages which are regularly updated on the RFID, and maybe this will come to use on the next version of the CTAN network, that it automatically provides this TechMF. Yeah, let's jump to the third point. So various cron jobs like updating the database and checking stuff, this is ready, it's working. Consistency checks are missing, but they are quite nice and easy to do. I mean, it's text files and grep, unique, sort, and all this stuff shouldn't be too complicated. All the TPM stuff has already been removed, so if something new is written, then it's written using these Perl models. And the big point is the installer. We want to get one for the next release, but it will probably not work out. Reinhard is working on this, Katowil is working on this, and the menu structure is here, but it's quite a lot of work to completely redo the installer. So it could be that for the next release still we have to create these list files that the default installer can run, the old one. But this is a temporary thing. This installer is quite some lot of work, and here again, we are in fact three people working on all this now at the moment. So, what resources there are in case you want to contact us? So, the main is, of course, main contact point is our mailing list, Tech Life at the Cook Organa seat. Then, on the web, there are quite a lot of information. The main point is also on the Cook Org site, where a lot of documentation, bug reports, and this kind of stuff is there. There is a web view on the Subversion repository, where you can find all the stuff, including PDF versions of the documentation and this kind. You can check out the S4N repository. Here's the S4N. As I said already, it's quite big, so take a bit of care. Especially check out only the trunk, because there are tags and branches, and you don't want to have this one. And there's, for the CTAN to Tech Life, if one wants to help, how to update single packages, then there's also a bit explanation on how to do this, because it needs quite some work. So, thanks a lot for attention, and I hope to see some one of you around here helping us out here. Thanks.
Any questions? Also in Italian, because as you can see, Norbert is also speaking Italian.
Is subversion access already available?
Yes, yes, yes.
And let's say I submit the package to CTAN, it will become available on subversion.
If you put some package on CTAN, then we get the email. The usual email is sent out to the tech user group, to the tech news group, and to the mailing list. Then we get an email, and then normally within 1 week it will appear in Tech Life. What is put on CTAN, we put into Tech Life. This is a big problem because some authors prefer not to put stuff on CTAN or are just too lazy, and this is a bit of a pain because we don't want to update from different sources.
If I understand correctly, you can't update package directly from CTAN, let's say.
In your local installation. Well, of course, you can do it by hand. This is what you, if you want.
One of the goals is to do this process, to make this process automatic.
No. We want to do the work on the TUC.org server, and we get, if there's an update of the package on the CTAN RFID, we just, within some time, if Carl is here or me finds time, we're putting this up into the library repository. This is the idea of the future. And an IPA system just runs and creates these zip files, this distribution,
And then the local installation checks the web for, ah, there's an update of this and that. So it's not guidable directly from the CTAM, because then you would have to install the CTAM to the client before the script, and this doesn't work because you would have, you would need the whole subversion of the
problems. How, when do you expect to have this available? It's months, years.
Well, the infrastructure, one of the models I wrote in 2 months, 3 months. So the problem is that, now I've been about since a few months I'm being employed at the University of Vienna, so it's not that I can spend my whole time on this. The installer is the first thing we have to get ready. As soon as we have the installer ready, the installer should be more or less the same as the update program, because the update program is, I mean, to create these packages, this can be built already now. This already everything here, we're just not doing it because it's useless. But we could already create all this distribution stuff. But the installer is updated at least. And before we have to create this one, we won't do this anymore. Well, installer and updated, this is something it's hard to say, really. I mean, Reinhard is working on this, but there's other things to do too. And this, yeah, this will need some really help. It's not too hard, I mean, it's worth holding at least. And then we have these intricacies of Windows, Unix world, Apple, Windows, Mac, Unix world that is working everywhere. But I still hope to get that we have it ready for the next release. But Rand says no. I still hope. Depending on the large and time directions of the car, still.
May I ask a question? If I correctly understood what you exposed, the whole system should be should work more or less automatically when it will be completed. Now, how is it possible to check that TextLive will not contain obsolete material? I just make an example. I was just running through the documentation in the TextMF dist directory, and I found, for example, the documentation for the package ogonek.sty, which is has been for years part of regular LaTeX, but at the very beginning, 1994, the ogonek was not yet implemented. But now we are in 2007, and that package is still offered as...
Well, let's put it this way. What is in TechLife is what is on the comprehensive tech
architecture. Yes.
We don't delete anything. Well, it's not completely true. Some things have been deleted already, for example, the fancy headings, which because we have fancy headers. But generally, because, well, stuff which is old does not hurt because it's just lying around in the sense. And if some old document uses this stuff, then well, they still at least have a chance to run. Mm-hmm. Let's put it this way. But you are touching a point. It's right. I mean, nobody ever verified that every package we have in TechLife is at the same not outdated or taken from the CTAM, because if something new is coming or updated on the CTAM, we are putting it into TechLife, but we are not checking all 1,500 packages. Well, in fact, we are starting to change for the license stuff, and on this way we are checking stuff which is just obsolete. But 1,500 packages checking for license stuff you don't want.
Okay.
No, but this, of course, yeah, this is the problem, of course, with the approach that we take everything what is on CTAM archive.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much, Robert.